plaster would be just as stiff as a board around you, and you're really tickled to get the thing off. And a child would never say that they were too sick to go to school, because in most cases they would get a dose of castor oil. That was a right remedy for sending kids, getting children, making them willing to go to school. Our family was quite lucky that way, because our parents had been told by one of the doctors that castor oil was considered too harsh to give to children, that they should use Dr. Cadwell's syrup of Pepsin, so that's what we got, so it wasn't too bad. And transportation at it was mostly by horses and trains, as I've pointed out, and one of the big songs of that day was, I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. This was as the war in Europe was going harder and harder all the time, and there were more talk of wondering whether America would get into the war in Europe. Chickens had to be killed. The mother usually wouldn't have time to go get the father. He'd be back in the field, and she'd have to take the axe herself and kill the chicken, and maybe have one of the children help her catch the chicken. And she had to be sure to save the feathers, be careful with the feathers, because that was the way she got her pillows, was the feathers she saved. And then the potatoes, they would have to come from the garden. And anything she baked, she'd have to do. For instance, she would always have to be baking bread. And
what kind of a stove did you have?
We had a wood stove. Everything had to, I used to have to carry in wood to help keep the wood box filled. And on one end of the stove was a reservoir. I'd have to carry in water and fill the reservoir so we would have hot water when we needed it. And there was churning to be done. And they had a cream separator after the milking was done in the morning and night. That had to be taken care of, and that was like an extra batch of dishes to clean up that cream separator each time. The father of the house, he would turn the separator. And then in the wintertime, if you didn't have anything else to do, they would thrash the beans in the fall, and then they would look over the beans in the wintertime. Well, they would hand-pick the beans. Some farmers took their beans directly to the elevator just as they came from the thrashing machine. But if you kept them home and looked over and picked out the bad ones, if yours were hand-picked, they bought the better price on the market. So you would, if you possibly do it, you would pick over the beans yourself. And the washing was quite a job. They would usually start early in the morning and wash over a washboard all day. It'd take most of the day to do the washing. And I would take care of the baby while my mother did the washing. And then there was the ironing. There was no electricity at that time there in that vicinity. And you would heat the irons on the stove and do your ironing that way.
How many irons did you have?
You'd usually have about three, I think. You'd have to have at least two, and I think it'd be better if you had three.
So you could always have a heat. heating.
Yes, you'd have to have some heat back in the stove.
How long did it take for them to heat up, you know? Or how long did they stay hot?
You know, they wouldn't stay hot so very long. I think maybe you'd probably be able to iron them, maybe a shirt or something like that. You'd have to get a different one off the stove. They change quite often. And another day that I haven't mentioned was when the thrashers came too. And that would be a big lot of work for the woman of the house. She'd have to have some of the other neighbor women come in and help her, usually, unless she had some big girls.
Just to get the food ready for?
Yes, to get the food ready for the thrashers. Because she'd have a big group of men, because the men changed work back and forth to do the thrashing. And then when the thrashing was done, they would take all the ticks off the beds. And what a tick is a great big, like a great big pillowcase, and they'd always made of ticking, heavy ticking. And they would take that out to the barn and fill that full of, throw out the old straw and put in new straw, and that would be your bed tick then. You didn't have mattresses at that time. You didn't sleep on mattresses.
So they changed the straw once a year?
Yes. Whenever they thrashed, then they would change to new straw. So everything on the bed was made at home, the tick and the pillows. And you might possibly have bought a sheet or something like that, but all the bedding, they pieced their quilts, they would send away. If they didn't get enough pieces from their own sewing, they'd send some company and get a bag of pieces, and then they would piece a quilt top, and women would go together and quilt these quilt tops, or they would get a lot of flowered material. They would sometimes have sateen and big beautiful flowers on it, and they would make heavy comforters of that, and they would get a big heavy batten and put in that. That would have to be tied. Well, I saw it there right now. Clothing was mostly made at home. A little girl might have a slip. It might be made of flannel in it, I had a real pretty one when I was small. It was made of red flannel, and then it had hand-crocheted lace all the way around the bottom of it. This crocheted lace was made of red sand silk. And a lot of things that people used at that time came in cloth bags, like the sugar and the flour, and I believe that sometimes even the salt came in cloth bags. And these pieces of unbleached muslin, they called them, would always be put to good use in the home. They could make a little pair of bloomers, or they could be in a dish towel. There was a number of ways that this cloth was used. And also, they might buy a little panty waist that they would put on a child, and then you would have your long, something, there was a special place that it was double knit, a row of double knit on it, and so that you could have a good strong place to fasten the safety pin in the of your garters. And these long garters would hold up your long black stockings. Of course, in the summertime, you would wear white. You might wear a white pair of stockings to Sunday school or church, special occasion, but a lot of the time in the summertime, the children would go barefoot, and they really would be going barefoot before their parents would want them to go. It was a custom among the children that the first warm day in the spring, the teacher would take them out in the woods, and we'd all go looking for wild trailing arbutus. And before we would get back from that trip, just about everybody in the whole school would have their shoes, be carrying their shoes. And the little boys, they would have suits made of seersucker. And when they were going to school, they would usually sometimes go in overalls too. There was only one boy in the whole school that really had a boughten suit in our school, and he was the son of the saloon keeper. Mother would make all her own clothing and the baby's clothing. Dad would get a new suit, but in the 4 years that we lived there, I think that was the only suit that he got. And your overcoat, you would buy that ready-made, and sweaters. And children would have stockings. What they usually wore to school. Sometimes the little girls would be shaped like a bonnet and have some strings on it. And another thing that people did that was unusual then, a little extra in the summertime, we got to go to a camp meeting. And we were taken, my mother took us on a train. She had three of us. My second brother was a few months old at that time. And we went up to Pine River. We went first to Pinconning by train, and then on up to Saguenay and Pine River. And there was a campground up there. And when we got there, the people from the camp meeting hadn't gotten any word that we were coming. And they didn't come to meet us at the train, and my mother walked 2.5 miles, and she carried my brother, and we had our clothing packed with us, and we carried our clothing, and it was quite a long walk, and I can never forget that. It was a beautiful place. The smell of the pine trees was real nice, and time that I ever saw an airplane, and everybody on the fairgrounds, they waited and waited for, they were stinking around with this airplane about all day, and it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, this man got this plane running, and it was quite a sight, this plane. It looked like just a bunch of wires mostly, and he finally got it going, and he went up over the, circled around the fairgrounds 2-3 times and come down. That was something that I'll never forget, or I think most all the other people there had never seen an airplane either. The way the mothers curled the little girls that time, they would take the package that the tea came in, this was made of lead foil, they would cut this into strips and wind the hair up on the tea lid. And some people would take a curling iron and lay it across the chimney of the lamp, and he'd curl her hair that way. But this was considered not so good for the hair, and so they wouldn't do that with a little girl's hair. And at this time, the war in Europe was going on and getting worse and worse, and one of the big news items of the day was that Henry Ford in Detroit was offering men $5 a day. Anybody that would come and work for him in his factory, the workers were getting scarce. And well, that got everybody talking on the farm and talking to moving off the farm. And so my father decided that he would move into Bay City. And also, I was getting older, and he wanted me to go to high school. I think that's one thing. Reason why he moved into Bay City, and there, I couldn't have went to high school where we was living out on the farm very well. He's 9 miles from a high school, and World War I had started, the United States had declared war on Germany. They'd been sinking American boats. The U-boats were real thick in the Atlantic Ocean, and some of our boats had come down, been sunk. And there was lots of stories going on about the soldiers over there, and they were in the mud trenches, and for days on end they didn't have too much food, and about all the cooties that was in their clothes, and the Kaiser Bill, and how his soldiers, they were committing such fierce things with the French people, and how they were molesting the French women and different things like that, and these big Bertha cannons that they had. And there were also, I believe, some stories. There were few airplanes in the war, but mostly we used to hear about the big Berthas, the big guns that they had when they were marching on Paris. And so we moved into Bay City. And we were used to all this good food out on the farm. We got in there and we had to eat oleo and we had to use canned milk, and we just hated each one of these things. And flour was rationed, and it might have been rationed out on the farm by that time, but anyhow, we wasn't there. We'd had plenty of it when we was that were there. And to get a sack of flour, you had to buy several other things in order to get this sack of flour. You had to buy maybe a sack of cornmeal, maybe some more oatmeal, and maybe some rice flour, and maybe some buckwheat. You'd have the oatmeal, we wouldn't mind, or possibly the cornmeal, but some of these other flours that they had, we had never eaten them before, and my mother had to make her bread with use all these different kinds of flours and things in her bread. And one time my folks, they had to pay $5 in order to get one sack of flour, because they had to buy all these other things to get it. And they hated. My father used to say some pretty critical things of Herbert Hoover, because Herbert Hoover was responsible for putting these orders into effect. It was called Hooverizing at the time. We were Hooverizing so that we could send more food over to Europe. And he would say that we were eating the food we should be feeding to the pigs, and so we could send the flour to Europe. And when the draftees were going away to the service, so everybody seemed to, nobody resisted. There weren't, you didn't hear anything about resistors or bombing the draft boards and things like that. The draftees, they all left with a big parade, and if anybody didn't want to go to the war, well, they were considered a slacker. And there were some people around the country yet that had come from Germany, and they'd have to send their sons. And one German family I knew, that three of their sons were sent to, went into the war. And we got, us children, we got quite a lot of enjoyment out of running down to the corner and watching these big parades go by, because we hadn't seen anything like that. And the bands marching, and the one that I used to like to watch the best was Grand Army of Republic. They were the old Civil War soldiers with their fife and drum. I always liked that. And some of the songs they were singing then were, "We're coming over and we won't be back till it's over there," and "Keep the home fires burning." Then every little while they'd have a new victory bond drive too. And they'd have a lot of things over that. And the day that the armistice was signed, well, they would come around with newspapers, and they would be going up and down the streets hollering "extra, extra" at the top of their voice. And this might wake you up in the middle of the night, or it might be early in the morning. And they did that several times before and then they would find out it was a false alarm. But they finally, the day did come that they really did sign. And then all the church bells would ring, and the whistles would blow, and they would be parading up and down the streets. That lasted just about all day long, about midnight. And then the big thing that came after the armistice, or just about the same time, was a big flu epidemic. And the schools in Bay City, they were closed about 6 or 8 weeks. And all public gatherings were banned. There were no movies. The movies were shut down. The churches, all public gatherings. And there was a strict quarantine in any place where they had the flu.
What year was that?
That was the fall of 1918. And my father got the flu. And we were quarantined in. And they would put a large sign on your house. And it would be red and have black letters on it. And it was about 12 by 18, I would say, the sign that they put in your front of your house. And you weren't supposed to go anywhere. And you'd get off your lot, and the children would play out in the front. My brother was playing out in the front. And my mother said that one day she went out there, and his wagon was all filled with food. And the neighbors there, we were in a new neighborhood and not used to the city at all. And these neighbors, they had put dishes of food in his wagon. That made a big impression on us in that neighborhood.
Yeah. But you said when you were quarantined that you could go out, but just on your yard.
Yes.
How was your? One thing I was thinking about when you were talking about the different food that you had in Bay City. What food you got then? Did you still have to order through the mail order?
Oh no, no. There was lots of stores in Bay City to go to.
So you had.
Yes, everything was different then. That changed all that.
What about your home life? Was that any different at all after you moved into Bay City? Were there any other things that were different about it?
Well,
or any kind of different kinds of activities maybe? Did you talk to parades? You hadn't seen parades before. Was there anything else that was different at home or out in the community?
It was quite a change that my mother took me downtown and bought me a new hat and went into a store and tried the hat on. And you had a choice of hats. We went down to Wendland's and she bought me a hat, and that cost $1.75, and I thought that was just the most wonderful thing that I had ever had.
What about school? What was it?
It was so different because in place of a one-room school with about 25 children in it, you were in a high school with about 500, and it was so different.
What high school was it?
It was Eastern High School. It's located on North Madison between 11th and 12th.
Were there more activities associated with the school there than they had been out in the one-room schools? Did you have more things to do?
No, I don't think there were. It didn't seem like there was much activity with the school. At that time, the school was quite crowded. And you didn't even have the studies that normally, I guess, had went on in high school. The classes were crowded, and there were a few things, but not very. You didn't get much. You didn't get acquainted with your teachers or the other students like you did in the country schools. Probably more lonely. There was a lot more people in town, but we probably felt more lonely because we weren't used to the things and we didn't know anybody in town. There were lots of people there, we didn't know them, but it did make a big impression on us when these people put all this food in this wagon like that.
Yeah. It sounded like they were pretty good neighbors.
And my mother went out one night, and when my dad was getting better, she went out at night and went a ways from home, quite a ways. She had to go alone at night and to a butcher shop, and she got a chicken and fixed it for my dad so he could have something to eat. He had the flu very hard, and when he was at the worst, well, the doctor came at night, and she got his children out of bed, and we went downtown in Bay City to a drugstore that stayed open about all night, and she got me and my brother both out.
How did you get around in Bay City?
We walked, mostly. There were streetcars, some, for a while. After the war was over, there were streetcars the first year we lived there.
Were there many cars around? Or?
There were more than out in the country, but they still weren't very many. Out in the country, the people that did have them couldn't use them only part of the time on account of the roads, but in Bay City, they could go around with them.
How were the roads? Were they just dirt in Bay City, too? Were they paved that way?
Well, some of them were paved. They weren't as many paved as there are now. And people walked more. People didn't depend on their cars to go to work with. There was a dentist lived by us, a doctor down there that he walked about 14 blocks to work, down to his office, back and forth every day. People, they just didn't, as soon as they got a car, they just didn't quit walking right off. They'd use their car for longer. During the flu epidemic, the doctors were pretty busy, and the health nurse came around. This was Miss Ella Redman, and we were real appreciative of this nurse. Glad to get back to school again when school started. But another thing that we noticed when we got into town, there were lots of stores, and we found a small church to go to quite near our home, and people welcomed us there, and I had a real nice Sunday school teacher, and she would have things for her Sunday school class, and after school, once a week, she would have all the girls get together, and she was teaching us how to knit. We were all learning how to knit socks, and if the war had lasted longer, I would have learned how to knit, but it didn't last quite that long.
This was to knit socks to send over to the
overseas, yes. As everybody that knew how to knit was knitting for the soldiers overseas. And another thing that they had in that war that was different than the war we previously went through, they had the flags that they hung in the windows, and they would have a star for every boy that had gone from that home into the service. A gold star for anyone that had died, a blue star for one that was still living. There were a lot of people that were sad to see their boys go, and boys were a lot of homesick boys that went into the service, but they felt at that time, the majority of them, that they were doing their patriotic duty by their country, and there seemed to be a feeling that they had to go and defend their country. And anybody that didn't want to do so was a slacker. And the same way with rationing, that they took all these things more or less because they felt that they had to do these things, that it was their moral duty to do them.